Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcherless bullpen expert Rick. How's it going? We are 2 weeks from our last podcast. It's middle of the postseason. How are you feeling about the whole postseason? How are you feeling about the offseason in general, which should be coming by the next time we podcast?
Yeah, I know. I think the last time we talked, I mentioned I was rooting for a Mariner Brewer World Series, and we were close, but it's kind of there. I know you hate the Dodgers, and I get it, like, who doesn't? But it's kind of fun, I guess, the storyline with, like, Ohtani a little bit, the Dodger Toronto storyline of Ohtani is interesting. Toronto's still a team, yeah, that you can kind of root for. They haven't been here in a while. Fun guys like Vlad. So, yeah, it's still going to be a really fun series. The way the Dodgers rotation is working right now, it's really hard to bet against them. And now Ohtani's, like, you know, the hitting again, and just it just seems unstoppable both sides of the ball. So, yeah, Toronto's got their work cut out, but yeah, should be a fun series either way. And then the real offseason starts. I feel like we're still in baseball mode. Mm-hmm. Once free agents are available, that's when it's like, okay, here we go. Let's make some moves. Let's make things interesting, you know.
It's certainly a good matchup for ratings, considering how popular the Dodgers are, and you get the real international appeal, not only with Ohtani and the other international teammates on the Dodgers, including like Roki Sasaki and Yoshinobu Yamamoto and even Hyesung Kim, who I've not seen him play at all. But you also get the Blue Jays fan base, which technically that is international. You got a whole another country there rooting. So you get, we could have had that with the Mariners, with Josh Naylor, but I don't know if that was going to draw the whole country of Canada into watching those series. So we'll at least see really good ratings. There's going to be a lot of people watching this World Series. Yeah. And honestly, if you think about the last two World Series compared to 2023, where I don't know, I haven't looked at the ratings specifically, but going from like a Diamondbacks Rangers World Series where it's almost like, you know, nobody really cared about that one. It sort of felt like that if you're not a big baseball fan, or at least a Diamondbacks or Rangers fan, there really wasn't much to watch that for if you weren't, you know, diehard invested, baseball fan. Yeah. Right. But then last year you get Dodgers Yankees, which is about as big of like a World Series as you can get just for ratings. And then following that up with Blue Jays Dodgers is pretty good. And I don't know. Let's break down the championship series a little bit before we get into the main crux of our podcast, where we'll discuss the mock draft we did, the way too early mock draft we did with the rest of the Pitcherless podcast teams. And we'll discuss mostly where relievers went in that draft, as we are a reliever focused podcast, but we'll also touch a little bit on the rest of the players that you and I took. But let's first focus on the playoffs, as we just wrapped up the NLCS and the ALCS, and we're recording on Thursday night ahead of game one of the World Series. Let's start with the championship series in the National League, since that one wrapped up first. It was awful to watch as a Dodgers hater. The Brewers got absolutely trounced. They could not hit at all. I did want to first discuss the bullpen usage on the Brewers side. I don't think there's much to talk about in bullpens outside of that, but it did feel as though Abner Uribe maintain some sort of semblance of a closer role, where McGill was used throughout games when they were losing. They never really had a save opportunity, so you can't really say that guy's the closer in the championship series. But did you feel, because I know we talked about this a couple weeks ago, did you still feel like Uribe was being used, I don't know, in more of a closer fashion than McGill was?
Yeah, as far as, I mean, when you're looking at like this situation, you know, postseason, where kind of your closer can be used anywhere. And yeah, Uribe got some usage in like the seventh inning, which sorry, Mariners fans, but maybe your manager needs to take a hint on that one. I feel like the seventh inning is where you can start looking at, you know, bringing your closer in.
Mm-hmm.
McGill's usage, I don't know if it was partially because, you know, they weren't sure with him coming back from an injury or what it was, but yeah, it was weird between the two of them. I don't know if it means anything for next year. I feel like it's just like kind of, you know, piecing things together here at the end of the year based on health, but definitely interesting. I mean, I saw like we'll talk about draft picks, but I noticed you did take a flyer on Uribe at one point, and mm-hmm. yeah, I think that's totally justified. Just to, you know, he's definitely got closer stuff. He would be an elite closer, and I think McGill's pretty safe, but it's wouldn't shock me if they're, you know, if Uribe started getting saves early on next season. And McGill's got a ton of, you know, he's got a long injury history as well. Yeah. So there's definitely some upside to taking a flyer on a guy like Uribe late. They didn't really have a chance to, we didn't really get a chance to see what the actual pecking order was because they just never had a lead in the late innings.
Right.
But yeah, Uribe for his part was a little shaky, settled down more towards the end of the series. But mm-hmm. You can see some, like when that command starts to go, it kind of gets, it gets really, really dicey. Similar to Justin Martinez, it took him a little while too. And now he's, you know, before he got hurt, he was, you know, not walking as many guys. So I think, I think Uribe is fine for next year. Just whether or not he's a closer, yeah, probably would take a McGill injury in my mind.
Mm-hmm. All right. It could go either way. It does feel like the Brewers could be in a position to trade. Yeah. They will be losing guys like Freddie Peralta and I'm sure others in free agency.
Need rotation guys. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I feel like it could go either way. And the thing is, I feel like McGill's going to go a lot earlier in drafts than Uribe. So I feel like taking that flyer on him is pretty, I don't know, forward.
Especially October. It's like,
Right. Because once we see spring training, I think we'll have a lot better idea of how they're going to use them. Like you mentioned, the injury, but also I don't know how they see Uribe and maybe they see him better used in a closer role. I think McGill is probably better suited for that because of Uribe's like ability to get ground balls, get out of jams and stuff. McGill That's is more of like too. Overwhelming strikeout guy, and mm-hmm. he's had a lot of success in the role the past couple of years, but there is a part of me that thinks there's a possibility that Uribe just takes over that role from the beginning. I mean, they had him in the role to close out the season. It's always felt like he's the closer of the future since he's sort of settled down and gotten his walks in control. So there is a possibility that he even just opens the season as the closer next year. But yeah, right now, I think if you're getting him super late in drafts, it's definitely worth taking the flyer on him. The Brewers' other free agents are like Brandon Woodruff. It's a lot of options. Jansen, Hoskins, Peralta, Quintana, Woodruff. So nothing crazy, but I wouldn't be surprised if they trade off some guys. They are a team that are always sort of toeing the line of being in contention.
Being a contender, but also selling off money.
Right. Yeah, they do it so well, though. They do it so well. Yeah.
Like the Rays used to do at least. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. On the Dodgers side, I think there's not much to talk about in terms of bullpens. We've continued to see Roky Sasaki close, but I think we're both of the opinion that Sasaki's going to get a chance to start again next year. And even if the Dodgers have five healthy starters, it's most likely that they'll go with a six-man rotation considering the amount of NPB starters they have. And most notably Otani, who probably
needs the
extra rest.
Needs the 5 days rest.
That should make sense. I am losing faith in Blake Treinen. So as I'm like working on my closer rankings, I'm like, is Blake Treinen even in the top 40? I mean, you look at his previous three seasons and he has like a sub-2 ERA in all of them. And then this one, it's just, he lost everything. And it's worth noting how old he is Like, okay, yeah, this could just be the decline phase for him. And also with so much competition in that bullpen, like Tanner Scott is probably going to be the closer to open the season for the Dodgers.
He's still getting paid like it. Yeah.
Right. So I'm losing faith in Blake Treinen as somebody that I would want to even consider in like a 15 team league.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember where I even had him, but it was down the list. I think, you know, it's also the Dodgers. Like Tanner Scott's getting paid like a closer, but that doesn't mean like they're not going to go after. I don't think like Edwin Diaz, but like maybe like. Or they're like Devin Williams, like, hey, come here for a year, rehab your value. Like, you know, like there's always a chance the Dodgers, I mean, they're already in on Kyle Tucker and every right. starter.
And they have players. Like, they have the excuse of being like, well, look how bad our bullpen was this year. We can go out and get some crazy, because they did that last year. We didn't think they needed any upgrades in the bullpen.
Kirby Yates and Tanner Scott. Yeah,
what if we got Kirby Yates and Tanner Scott? Exactly.
So I wouldn't be surprised if they throw money at least one reliever, or even if they just take a couple, you know, maybe one or two flyers on some guys. So I think there's going to be more competition there. But as things are now, just Scott getting paid, and even as bad as he was and ended the season, you know, the way that ended, I don't think Scott's stuff isn't like Tanner Scott's stuff. It didn't just disappear. I think he's got a good chance to bounce back next year.
Mm-hmm.
As long as he gets a chance to close out games, and like they'll have, you know, they have so many other lefties there. Vesey will be back. Dreyer. The Banda, I think, has another year. Yeah. So, I mean, they'll be all set, but with lefties. So I think Scott should be getting a chance to close again. But yeah, watch out for the Dodgers to sign literally anyone, because no one's off the table for them.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine Edwin Diaz. I mean, it wouldn't, like, why not?
Why not? Because I wouldn't like it.
I know, but.
Yeah, there's also, like, I mean, if we're talking about Tanner Scott's performance from last season, there's also the talk about, or just the current situation that he's in, where he's injured. We don't know if he's going to be on the World Series roster. He's working his way back from some, I think it was a shoulder injury, right?
Yeah. He says he's healthy and ready to pitch in the World Series, but they haven't made a decision on him yet. So
that alongside like clear bad luck for him throughout the season is reason to believe that he's going to be fine next year. You look at the underlying metrics and everything's still there for Tanner Scott. But and
Jeff Hoffman both
right.
had some bad luck.
But then
bad
luck, but then you throw in the shoulder injury for Scott and you're like, oh, okay. Yeah. It sort of makes sense. Like, I wouldn't be surprised that his numbers are what they are and that he would have a big bounce back next year. And it was probably something that he was pushing through to finish the regular season.
His usage in Miami was like, he was used a lot. So I'm not surprised there was some fatigue. Hopefully, this is the Dodgers, you know, if you have any sort of fatigue, need any rest, like they'll, you know, you can get it there. So hopefully, he's fresh for next season, ready for a full season.
And if we're talking about the NLCS from this year, I think we have to mention Otani's performance in game four, and not because I want to talk positively about the Dodgers or that nobody has talked about this performance yet. It was crazy the amount of people, because I like the people that know me in the real world outside of the internet know me also as a baseball guy. So it's like every single person is like texting me. Any person that saw me after that was like, what do you think about Otani's performance? I'm like, okay, you gotta pay me for this baseball analysis. But also it was like, oh my gosh, everybody cares about this. Everybody wants to know, like, oh my gosh, did you see that game? Like, what do you think about it? And I think, like, without a doubt, that's like the best performance we've ever seen in the playoffs and probably will ever see, unless Otani does it again.
Yeah.
Crazier. Yeah.
He goes 7 innings, 12 strikeouts, 3 home runs.
Right.
I don't know. There's like no words. I don't know. It's just things we'll never see again. I think there's always a possibility, but I just, you know, it's going to take a lot. So, it's just, there's certain guy. I mean, and it's cause I bring it up cause I was watching, you know, crossing sports here, but like Victor Wembanyama yesterday, like, that's another guy who, like, I don't think I'm ever going to see, like, if that guy's healthy, like, that's something we're never going to see again. And that's how it feels like with Ohtani. It's just like the skill set and the ability to do like everything at such a high level. And then like that's scary that now, like, he was struggling to hit. He didn't hit well last offseason or last postseason either. Mm-hmm. And now, like, that's, he had two back-to-back games after he took BP on the field at Dodger Stadium. And now if he's hot offensively, because obviously, you know, hitting at the top of the lineup, that kickstarts that whole offense. I hope Toronto can stick in this matchup, but looks like the Dodgers they're just a wagon. It starts with Ohtani, but the supporting pieces are just, they have like the right guy. It's not even just the stars too. It's like Tommy Edman and Kike Hernandez are like the perfect, like, playoff complementary pieces that you need. Yeah.
NLCS MVPs, right?
Yeah. Like, you know, even Muncy's had a pretty good postseason as well. So it's, they're just built for this. And other teams are built to win, you know, get into the postseason, have a good regular season, like a Brewers team. It's really deep, but, like, yeah, I don't know. Once October rolls around, the Dodgers is just, you know, different category.
Yeah, I mean, it used to not be like this, but ever since Ohtani's got there, the last couple of years have been lot different. I miss the days when Kershaw was squatting on the mound with his hand in his with his head in his hands, and the Dodgers were just perennially just insufferable in the postseason.
It makes you think too, like the Angels, like what could have been if, like, just a couple, if they, I don't know, just a couple more things went their way, or if they just made some.
They have the longest playoff drought now.
The Angels do? Yeah.
They haven't made the postseason since 2014. And the second longest one is the Pirates haven't made it since 2015, but every other team has made it within the last 7 years.
That's crazy. Yeah. The Angels, I remember Jared Weaver being like in their rotation back when they were last in the postseason. So yeah, it's been a while. And yeah, it's gonna hurt not seeing Ohtani having this success, and they could never even make it to October with him.
It was crazy to me that Ohtani won MVP, and not that he wasn't deserving, but that he was sort of held quiet for three games and then just had the greatest postseason performance of all time. Yeah, and they were like, all right, yeah, it's you, no problem.
There was a stat, I don't remember what it was, but it was like the like F war he had in that game alone is like more than like, I don't know.
I think it was like 0.9 or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like more than most, you know, players. There's no words. It's crazy.
Crazy. All right. Well, since we've run out of words to praise Ohtani in his game four performance, we'll move over to the American League Championship Series. And that one was a lot more riveting. As incredible as Ohtani's performance was to watch, this series was way better, went the full seven games. And it's certainly notable for these two teams as well. Blue Jays hadn't made the World Series in 32 years. The Mariners have never made the World Series. They've never come this close either. So it was super fun to watch. It felt like the Mariners were going to run away with it after those first couple of games, and even the first inning of game three after Julio hit a home run to open up the scoring in that one in Seattle. But the away teams were really strong, and the Blue Jays came through in the end. I think we can first touch on the bullpens here. I mean, the Mariners bullpen usage wasn't out of the ordinary. They had their usual guys. It did feel like Dan Wilson doesn't really have like a good feel for how to use that bullpen though. Yeah. It was like, okay, let's pull the starter out at this point, or let's leave him in. Let's bring in, you know, Brian Wu or whatever, Matt Brash in the fifth inning, and Eduard Bizardo is our best reliever, but Andres Munoz can only pitch in the ninth inning. It was like, come on, we gotta get some feel for these guys.
Brash's usage was weird. Yeah, and like it started like game six. Like I didn't love them bringing Brash in game six. I know you're down three. You're trying to kind of protect, you know, have a chance to come back and win that game. But like, it's a guy you might need, and like you might really need in game seven. And you know, I don't know if you go to Bizardo over Brash. First of all, Bizardo had an awesome postseason, and he actually had a really good second half. Like, That dude's an absolute workhorse. I mean, he pitched now like almost every game this postseason. He had like 79 innings in the regular season.
Yeah, 78 and two-thirds.
Just like, I mean, crazy to think about, especially like the stuff he's throwing. Like he's throwing like 97 mile per hour sinkers. So yeah, his I hope he's okay for next year, because his usage was just like it's insane to think how much, you know, pretty much every game he was in the postseason, and just like one mistake to Springer. I mean, other than that, he was awesome. And even still, like, I know how good he was, but like, you got to live and die. The leadoff hitter's up, and with the leadoff hitter tying run, you know, you got to go to Munoz. You got to be comfortable going to Munoz in the seventh inning there. And then you can piece it back. I mean, there were a couple ways you could have gone about that. I mean, Munoz could have gone two innings possibly, or you go to, even if it's like you have to go to Bizarro later or Spear, like you, at least you have the bottom of the order there. But you, Springer and like, obviously Vlad's the guy you got to avoid in that lineup. But other than that, I think Springer was the second guy you want
right.
to make sure you get out. So, yeah, that just, it, and even still, Toronto had some early in the postseason when they went to, or early in that series when they went to Little in the, they had some weird bullpen disasters too, with like going to guys in the eighth inning when you probably could, like if the eighth inning, like it's like that's closer time in October, like, and you gotta hope that your guy can go two innings. I know not all of them can, but like, this is do or die, you know, ALCS, like you gotta be comfortable. Like, Little hasn't been that great this postseason. It didn't end the year that great. A lot of like, you know, command issues. So like, just, I don't feel great going to him in a key spot in the eighth inning. But yeah, both those bullpens outside of the closers, and even Hoffman, I mean, Hoffman struggled all season, but he did pitch well, or he has pitched well in October so far. But yeah, it's like they don't really know. They have good bullpen pieces, but they don't really know what to do about, like, Wilson just got really reliant on Bizarro, and that was like, you know, there's guys that got you there. Like, I know Spear didn't have the best October, but he was really good all season.
And he was being brought in like the craziest situations.
It was
always like fifth and sixth inning, like most important spot of the game. And yeah, you want one of the best relievers in baseball to be pitching in those situations. But it did feel like he was sort of out of his element and always being thrust in difficult situations. And
it was like hard to keep up
your confidence, like, when it's like you're getting put in a lose-lose situation no matter what.
Yeah, it was. And I know, like, there's a lot of talk on Mariners Twitter about, like, Wilson needs to go because of how bad his bullpen management is. And it's like, that's, you know, he got them to the ALCS for the first time in how long. But, yeah, those are the type of situations where, like, you get a chance. I think he deserves a chance to, like, be able to fix this. But, like, yeah, he needs some help when it comes to making those decisions late game. Because, yeah, it's, I mean, everyone saw that coming, like, when in the seventh inning with Bizarro and, I don't know, it was a fun series nonetheless. I mean, I was really hoping the Mariners would get in.
Yeah.
I mean, Blue Jays fan base seems really cool too, but the Mariners are just like dying for something. So
for anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are worse teams to get into the World Series. We definitely could have had a worse matchup. We saw one last year.
Dodgers, Yankees, but, I know.
Yeah, that was the worst. But the Blue Jays bullpen was pretty interesting. I think they had a clear effort to mix their usage around rather than rely on the same guys over and over, and you get that familiarity effect that comes into factor. They mixed guys around, and that was sort of the strength of the Blue Jays bullpen that I think we recognized throughout the year. Was like, it's so deep. They have so many guys that like could handle anything. Like, I don't think Tommy Nance was even on the roster, but he was a guy who had like a sub-2 ERA. But, you know, Mason Fluarty, Braden Fisher, Brendan Little, you talked about. And then you have a guy like Louis Varland who can just come in and pitch every single game. And honestly, I've been so impressed by him. I don't think he's going to be somebody that's going to be overly fantasy relevant outside of leagues where holds are a factor, but I mean, his stuff just has played up so much in the bullpen. His ability to just come in and throw 100 miles per hour, and I think a lot of people will remember the pitch he threw to Aaron Judge that had his big home run, but ultimately didn't hurt the Blue Jays too much. But he's looked incredible. The rest of that bullpen, a little bit less incredible. But like you mentioned, Hoffman has been really solid. Hoffman and Varland are great. And I think the ability to have so many guys you can rely upon has made that Blue Jays bullpen pretty seal tight. And I'm excited to see how they factor in the World Series, but it's going to be a lot of reliance on, I think, Brandon Little getting guys like Shohei Ohtani and Freddie Freeman out.
They have at least Flaherty's a little, like they have those two guys who are both at times really don't like really dominant. But yeah, like between Freeman and Ohtani at the top of the order, maybe, and even Muncy wherever he is. I mean, yeah, those guys are going to be relied upon heavily. Little's probably just going to walk Ohtani a bunch this series. I can just see it happening. The one guy, like Sir Anthony Dominguez, is the one guy I wish I had a little bit more faith in. He's had some good outings, but like I don't feel like super comfortable with him. And like if you bring him in like the sixth, seventh inning against like a top middle of the order situation, especially that Dodgers lineup, I don't know. That's where I think things could go a little awry. But I think, getting from like Varland to Hoffman's pretty solid. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how those lefties fare, because that's one of the biggest factors in this series, I think, is those lefties against, Ohtani mostly, but also Freeman.
All right. To close out our playoff talk, I think since we are recording the day before the World Series, it's like perfect time to give a prediction. Who do you think is going to win? How many games?
I mean, I don't want the Dodgers to win, but
right.
It's
more important to be right.
Realistic, I know. If I want to be right, 5 or 6 games. I'm going to say 6 games. I think that Toronto can make it a little bit interesting. But yeah, that's once that rotation turns back over. I don't know. It's like I don't know who they're going to beat in that rotation right now.
Well, it's going to be about the bullpen. I mean, we talked
before. You got to keep it close. Yeah, you got to keep it close.
Yeah, Alex Vesia getting whatever happened. The tweet, the news about it, I mean, I thought the guy was dead at first. With heavy hearts, we report that Alex Vesia is going to miss some of the World Series. I was like, oh my gosh, I thought the guy was dead.
Not the best worded tweet,
No. But we did discuss very briefly. I know I'm sort of sneaking this in during the prediction that bullpen is now just even more so reliant on the very few guys that they trust. Like it's going to be Roki Sasaki show all day. And hopefully you get more complete games from guys like Yamamoto and near complete games from dudes like Snell. You ask the question, who are they going to beat in the rotation? I don't think they are, but there are very clear cracks in the bullpen.
You got to get those starters out then, which teams have not been able to do. But yeah, you have to get to the seventh inning. And yeah, I mean, Roberts is still relying on Trinan. So Trinan's still going to be a guy. So that's the guy. I think that's the guy you can get after. Mm-hmm. And even like Sasaki's been pitching well.
Just don't swing.
Yeah, I mean that splitter he's got no command.
It's a
command
crazy pitch.
It's a crazy pitch, but like I don't know. It's tough to say from our situation, like our spot here, but like it's a little bit more discipline. I don't know, but I think both those guys are susceptible. And then if they don't have Vesia, I mean maybe Tanner Scott's back, but I don't know what percent health he's at. So. And if did they even use him? And I mean, they might not even feel comfortable. They might be more comfortable with Anthony Banda if Vesey is out for long. So
yeah, I'm sure they'll be fine either way.
Yeah, I mean, Banda. That's the thing. You said you have to get to that bullpen. So I don't know. Just don't swing at the starters for like the first 5 innings. Just like let them build up a pitch count, and I hope that you can get them out in the 6th inning. That's their best bet.
Yep. Well, I, of course, cannot in good conscience say that the Dodgers are going to win. So I'll say Blue Jays I got to be more realistic. I'll say Blue Jays in 7, be a good series. That's what I'm hoping for. And yeah. I'd rather be right in that instance, then, you know, I'm okay being wrong if the Dodgers lose or win. So that's what we're going with. You're going Dodgers in five or six, and I'm going Blue Jays in seven. Uncle Ted's going Blue Jays in five.
So wow, that's bold.
That is very bold, and I'm all for it. Yeah. All right. So that will wrap up our playoff talk. Now we can get into our main topic as we discuss the way too early mock draft we did and compare it the way that the relievers were drafted in that to how we are ranking them, how Rick is ranking them for next year. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relief pitchers. We're going to talk about the mock draft we just wrapped up with the other pitcher list podcast teams. Rick and I got separate teams because I got to represent the First Pitch podcast and Rick represented the In the Pen podcast. So we each got to factor into how relievers were drafted here, but this does give us the opportunity to have a little bit of it's not technically ADP, but we get to talk about how pitchers are being drafted, how relievers are being drafted this early in the offseason, really get an idea super early on of where pitchers are going to be available, who's going higher or lower than we expect, and look at some guys that we probably won't be drafting come spring because of all the news that's going to come out, and compare it to Rick's ranks, which those came out last week, right?
Yeah, last Friday. Yeah.
All right. That's right. So go check those out over on pitcherlist.com.
I don't feel too comfortable about it because it's so early, so early. But hey, yeah. here we are. Yeah,
that's right. Okay, well, let's get right into it. And we'll go through the relievers and then we'll discuss our teams in full a little bit at the end. We can hit on some batters and starters, but let's start with the relievers. Edwin Diaz went as the number one reliever in this draft. You have Edwin Diaz ranked number two behind Mason Miller, who went number two. I feel like those guys are interchangeable in my mind. I think mm-hmm. there's question marks surrounding both of them. On Diaz's side, it's what team is he going to play for next year? He's got that every other year thing going too. And this upcoming year is going to be the other year where he doesn't do too well. And Mason Miller is, you know, probably going to be the closer for the Padres, but we don't know. They didn't use him as that. And obviously you can say, oh, that's because Robert Suarez was still there. And technically Robert Suarez is still on the Padres. He hasn't technically opted out yet. So there's a lot of like technicalities with these two, but even still, I think it's like, if you remove all of that, all the team related and usage related stuff, they're still pretty interchangeable. Like Miller's got the best strikeout stuff in baseball, but Diaz has better command than Miller and has a longer track record as well. Yeah. And it's not like Miller has been throughout his career untouchable. And when we saw it earlier this season and the previous season, where there were times when Miller was not like far and far away the best reliever in baseball, he could be touched. So I think you can go either way.
Yeah, that's kind of how I have them, as like 1-2 interchangeable. I lean Miller, and that's why I drafted Miller, because I think that 63 overall is probably a fair spot for him.
Right.
What he did in San Diego, like he started throwing a slider more in San Diego, and like he became just different from every other reliever in baseball. Like strikeout stuff over 50% strikeout rate. Unhittable. Like this is a guy who can be like in a tier by himself, especially if he's closing out games next year, which I don't know, maybe I don't feel as concerned about him being the closer. Maybe they bring Suarez back. That's the only thing. I don't think Miller is going to be in the rotation. I think like you look at like Edwin Diaz and Josh Hader, the way that their careers went, and like they had more starts than Mason Miller did at this point in their like professional careers. So I just feel like, you know, and Miller's, you know, he does kind of have a changeup, but like he's really a two pitch guy. He needs to just be a slider fastball that's 104 miles per hour. Like, why are we going to take that away? Let's just let him be the best reliever, best closer in baseball. He's still going to get paid over $100 million when his time is comes in free agency. I don't really think he's pushing too hard for the starter to be in the rotation. So, But like if Suarez is gone, I don't think like Estrada's still there. Morejon, I think Morejon's got a decent chance of being in the rotation. I think that's probably the route they go. So like between Estrada and like, I think you just think like Estrada's your seventh, eighth inning guy and Miller's your closer. And like, I think that's pretty clear cut. You traded a top prospect for the guy. I think he's either going to be, if he's not going to be in the rotation, then he's got to be your closer eventually. So yeah. And I just, Diaz is great, but I don't, he even like in his best years, I don't think he can really even touch, or what Diaz has left, I don't think he can touch Miller's upside. So
sure.
But yeah, that being said, Diaz won. Yeah, that's I'm five, no qualms with that. Maybe a little high, but like,
right. Nah, the disparity between the rounds was really what was notable, where Miller went in the sixth round and Edwin Diaz went early in the fifth round. I would have, or that was late in the fifth round and Miller went late in the sixth round. So there was a 14 pick difference between those two. I don't think it should be that large. I think there is a bit of a tendency for this draft to lean hitter-heavy early on. Yeah.
And this is for those, it's our settings are basically, our head-to-head, this is a 12-team head-to-head roto, or head-to-head, you know, 5x5. So
typical like Yahoo
league, So that's why closers are a little bit more devalued than if it was a roto league.
Right.
But even still, I mean, I think those prices are about right. It's hard to justify a closer in the top 50 anymore.
Yeah.
In general.
All right. Well, as we move through the draft, the seventh round saw the next two closers go, and that was a significant gap between them and the next trio of closers that went. Oh, yeah. And this was Andrés Muñoz and Yoan Duran. And I think after Diaz and Miller, there's sort of a pretty significant chunk of seven closers that I think can be pretty interchangeable. But it does feel like Muñoz and Duran are the, you know, they're pretty premier. Duran, having switched from the Twins to the Phillies, now has a much clearer path to closing. And that was always the question with Duran, was how many saves does Griffin Jacks steal from him? How many times does he pitch in the eighth inning and sort of get screwed over by Rocco Baldelli? Baldelli's no longer managing for the Twins, but Duran's now on the Phillies. It's a better ball club. I think Duran's still got some great stuff, and there's still more upside for his strikeout rate as well. And Muñoz, we finally saw breakout last year, but now I'm sort of leaning, like, when I was doing my rankings, I was so big on Muñoz last year, and now I sort of want to rank him lower than I did last year, because not only is he going to go earlier in drafts because of how successful he was, but compared to all these other guys, he does have the strikeout stuff and his repertoire is incredible, but the control is very clearly worse than everybody else's, where he's got a walk rate over 11% and there's nobody else here other than like Miller who's going to compete with him in that regard. So there's a bit of hesitancy for me, but I don't have any problem with Muñoz and Duran going there. But the fact that I see the five guys that went after him as interchangeable, I'm not going to be the guy who takes one of those guys first.
Yeah. I think if barring any like crazy changes here, like you said, there's the kind of the top two, but, and then there's like that, I'll put them in 1A, Miller and Diaz. And then like 1B is those eight guys behind there that I think that's where you want to just wait till there's one or two of those guys left. You want to make sure you get one of them, I think, in most spots. But yeah, like Muñoz and Duran, like you said, Duran, like there's more strikeout stuff. Like we've kind of been waiting for there to be like that strikeout uptick from Duran. It kind of hasn't happened. Is it going to happen? And then Muñoz's second half was definitely a little bit of a red flag for me. And the velocity has been up and down. Even in the postseason, it was like, you know, there was some times where he was like 95, 96. And then like there was times where he was able to amp it up to 98, 99. Not sure what that was, but the velocity for him was down in the second half. You know, he had a lot of big time usage this year for a guy who does have some injury history. So I have, like Muñoz and Duran are just like a little bit higher than I mean, I had him still in that top 10, but I had him, what, 7 and 8.
Yeah.
Because
rather than 3 and 4.
Yeah. So, and especially where, like, yeah. So they went 75, 79, and then the next guy went 104.
Right.
So I feel like that, like, that's.
There's
like,
not that big of a gap.
Yeah. Like, that's.
In, okay. in abilities. Yeah.
Maybe reached a little bit there, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. So those next three that went in the ninth round, and as you mentioned, it was like a 25 pick gap until the next closer was taken, and it doesn't feel like there's that much of an ability difference between these guys, but I think there are more questions about some of these guys than Munoz and Duran, you could say. The next three were Josh Hader, Aroldis Chapman, and Cade Smith. I took Cade Smith there as my first closer. I felt really good about that, getting him that late, because with Class A, you know, we have no idea what's up with him. It seems like he's going to be probably out for the rest of next season, or at least for a good significant chunk of it, that Cade Smith is going to be the closer. And honestly, if I have to say, like, you know, if last year I was like, who's last year's Ryan Helsley? When I said it was Andrés Muñoz, I think the next one's Cade Smith, where it's like, he's got the stuff. Everybody knows he's really good. He just doesn't have the save total that makes him a top five closer. I think he's the guy that, like, comes out of next season as like a clear cut top five closer, because he finally gets the chance to close full time.
Yeah. Those, the back to back Cade Smith, Chapman picks, I feel like were really good here. Especially considering, like we just said, with where Duran and Hader went. And I have Chapman and Smith 3-4, but again, pretty interchangeable. And like everything that's coming out about like Emmanuel Clase, like he's never going to, I don't think he's ever going to pitch in the major.
They won't even let him pitch in the Dominican League. Yeah.
Yeah. So the Guardians want nothing to do with him at this point. They're trying to distance themselves. Cade
Smith. Yeah. I think the GM said he had to just like pretty much just move forward as if Clase never pitches for them again.
That's what's going to happen. That's the most likely outcome. So,
and I think we'll probably see a resolution after the World Series. I don't think they want to take away from the World Series. That's probably why they haven't said anything, but I think we should see, they got to do something early in the off season. Yeah. I feel super confident about Cade Smith. Hader and Chapman, I think are pretty, they seem very similar to me. Obviously they're both lefty closers. The first lefty closers that we saw taken, but Hader's coming off an injury that took out all of his September. Chapman had, like, I don't know, I don't want to call it a breakout season, but it sort of was a breakout season. We've never seen this level of command from Chapman before, and also he's going to be old. He's going to be like the outside of Kenley Jansen, the oldest closer that will be drafted. So that's sort of the only question surrounding Chapman. Other than that, though, like, there's an argument to be made that he was the number one closer last year.
Yeah, it's just age is, it's not, I mean, yeah, age is the thing, but like, it's just like when the velocity goes is like when, that's when I start concerned. And the velocity went like 5 years ago and then it came back. So like, if he's, I don't know if he's, I'm sure he's getting tested for PEDs, but like just the things that he's doing at his age, throwing 100 plus 38, I mean, if he can keep that up, there's no reason to think that he can, those gains he made with his walk rate, I feel like those should stick as long as, you know, he just, like he said, just like trust the stuff, throw strikes, just throw the ball over the plate. It's, your stuff's good enough.
I think it's also worth noting that he probably slid a little bit because of, I think, maybe the way that pitcherless people tend to politicize him, you know, me being one of them, being like, because I would have taken him earlier. You have him as your number three closer, and in my ranking season, he's at least number four. I think I had him behind Hader. But yeah, I was like, I just don't want to draft him. I don't want to have to be like, oh yeah, I love this guy on my team, and let's see who took him, because we can know that keeper guy's cut. Not keeper cut. Who was that? Was Pete?
Chad Young.
We see how it is. I think that probably factored into it a little why he went so late, because I think Chapman deserves to be drafted at least around like Munoz and Duran in the 70s.
Yeah, and I guess like with Hader, and that the only concern of Hader is just like, is like, where is he health wise?
Right.
I just want to, like, is he like, you know, is he like going to be okay for start of like the year? Like, I know there was talk about if they did make the postseason, he might be ready at some point. But like, I don't know, that just shoulder injury with him. He's got a lot of mileage. I just want to get a better, like, just get a clean bill of health from him. And then I would probably have him three, because he's the one guy who kind of in this tier outside of like Devin Williams, if everything clicks again, like I think Hader's the one guy in this tier that can like push into that top tier with Miller and Diaz.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, he's got the strikeout stuff. He still showed it last year. He's still a big strikeout machine.
Track record.
Yeah.
Team.
Yeah. So if he's healthy, I think that's that'll probably, you know, the healthier we see him towards opening day, the more he'll probably slide up to two or three, probably three. I don't know if he gets into the top two, but we'll see.
Yeah. Moving forward, the next round, the 10th round, saw no relievers, so we skipped that round, and then the following round we saw three more go, and I think there's much to discuss here. It made sense that David Bednar was the first one to go here. I feel like he's going to be a really sneaky pick, because I think a lot of people are still sort of unsure what to think about him because of how things ended in Pittsburgh, but he was so dominant for most of the season last year. He's been in the past a clear top 10 reliever outside of just like 2024 and the first few weeks of 2025. He's been one of the best relievers in baseball, and now he's pitching for the Yankees. They're losing Williams and Weaver, so it's very clear that he's going to be the closer next year. I feel really confident in Bednar, and he's like that last guy in that, you know, 1B tier for me. Just, and it's, I think it's fair to also put Trevor McGill maybe in that 1B tier, but I'm a little waffly there because of Abner Uribe and the usage in the postseason. McGill went 129, Bednar 124, and in between them, Carlos Estevez went 128. And I don't think I can get behind that at all. And this is a clear situation of, you know, somebody just paying up for saves, because last year led baseball in saves with 42. He had a good season the previous year as well, but none of it seems sustainable. He had a very low strikeout rate, is in the 20%, and it all feels like it's just going to fall apart at some point. And ultimately, like, if nothing changes and he still has the same amount of luck, you're still not expecting 42 saves from him next year.
Yeah, it's not going to be. He could still have a fine season, but That's definitely, yeah. Even for me, like, I knew he was going to go higher than I expected. Uh-huh. That was even like,
no, that was crazy.
Whoa. Especially with some other guys on the board, like, yeah, McGill came one pick after him. And then the next couple guys even. Yeah. So I settled on Estevez at 20. That could definitely go, should go one way or the other, depending on how other guys settle in free agency. But yeah, just a lot of concerns with, you know, is he able to repeat? Is he able to is he going to be that lucky again? I mean, he might. I mean, he could. Again, like the Alex Colome, you know, fallacy, I guess. I don't know. But like, Colome had two good seasons, two and a half good seasons that like shouldn't have been. And then that's when things kind of just fell apart after that. So maybe we got another one from Estevez. I'm not willing to risk it. There's a lot of other fun closers. That's why for me, I'm not into Estevez. You can get another 40 saves.
So much upside.
Yeah. I'd rather take a chance on a lot of names after that were drafted after this.
All right. Well, that's the first 10 closers that were taken. Next, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will wrap up the relievers that were drafted in our way too early mock draft here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relievers. We are running through the results of our mock draft and focusing on the order in which the relievers were taken and comparing them to Rick's closer ranks. We just wrapped up the top 10, so we'll keep moving through the rounds. Devin Williams sort of stands alone here in the 12th round, and honestly, that is like one of the steals of the draft, if I have to say so. Devin Williams going at pick 139. And I understand why there's a little bit of hesitancy surrounding him. He really struggled results-wise throughout the season. He's going to be a free agent, so we don't know where he's going to go. We don't know if he's going to close. You mentioned he could go to the Dodgers, and that way, you know, we don't know what his usage is going to be. But man, Devin Williams has probably the highest ceiling of, you know, pretty much any reliever other than like Mason Miller. Like he's a guy that can enter up there, like you said, with Hader, can enter up into that top three, that 1A tier of closers. He's got the stuff. We've seen it in the past, and he could go anywhere at this point and will probably be a closer. And I don't really feel like the results last year were indicative of his stuff. You look at all the underlying metrics, everything's intact. He just had an unlucky season. The usage was all over the place. And I think he's going to have a huge bounce back season. So getting him as the 11th closer is crazy.
Yeah, he had two bad weeks, two or three bad weeks for Williams. But other than that, he was just awesome last year. Yankee fans don't want to hear it. I get it. But that's just how it was. He was really good for the most part, outside of a few, hiccups. But I think, I don't know how this happened, but I think Nick had the best draft of relievers between getting Williams here and then way later getting Tanner Scott. I think that's the type of upside I would shoot for, especially the costs. Because I had Williams. I think Williams is easily in that top 10. He got
Jeff Hoffman.
Jeff Hoffman. That's what
Kyle got Tanner Scott.
Yeah, the Hoffman though, but I think Hoffman, that's a great value that late.
Two rounds later.
I think Williams, if he wants to close, he's gonna have offers from teams that will be like, hey, come in, you be our closer. He'll probably have offers from really good teams too to come in and be like a setup guy. I guess it depends on what he wants, looking for. Yeah. Because he can definitely close out. I want to see him go San Francisco's a death place where I think they'll spend money on someone this off season.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Devin Williams there would be awesome. That's a pretty good fit. Sure, the Cubs might be interested too, just because of the council factor. Williams will. I mean, Rangers should be on him. There's a bunch of teams that are in need of a closer this offseason. Mm-hmm. So I feel like Williams, even if it's like a 1 year deal, just because the ERA looks terrible, and all right, come rehab your value, sign here for 1 year, $12 million, $15 million, whatever it is, and then get your multi year deal next year. I feel like that might be the way to go for him, but that comes with being a closer. So I think I have him at 75%. I'm certain he'll be a closer.
Mm-hmm.
So more likely than not. But the price Nick got him at is I thought about him in that round too. But I don't want to take a second closer yet. I kind of want, because I wanted to take some flyers on, especially in the mock. I'm like, I like to throw flyers late just to kind of put some guys on the board. But I was really tempted. If this was an actual draft, I probably would have taken Williams before then.
Yeah, that's so late. And you have him at number six. So there's clearly even upside outside of what is possible and what is expected of him. I think he could even go beyond that. So after Devin Williams went, we had another round where there were no closers taken. And then we had back-to-back rounds where it was just reliever city. We just had so many going, and I think that speaks to how things stand in the middle here, where there's so much uncertainty this early in the off season, and also there's a lot of similar guys that have either a lot of questions or a lot of upside, a lot of uncertainty, and guys that are maybe getting older and yet still performed well last year. So I'll just read off the names that go between pick 164 and 179. So a 15 pick range. We had Pete Fairbanks, Ryan Helsley, Daniel Palencia, Robert Suarez, Raisel Iglesias, Jeff Hoffman, Kyle Finnegan, and Kenley Jansen. I think all of these guys can be closers next year, but there's some clear guys that stand out that I think, maybe shouldn't have gone this early. Most notably, I think Kyle Finnegan, he's had a lot of success closing for the Nationals. We've always said that he's not somebody we expect to continue to have that success, but then he went to Detroit and looked like a completely different pitcher. So who knows?
I know.
But he's a free agent now, so we don't know who he's going to pitch for. I think the same can be said about Ryan Helsley, where he completely fell apart with the Mets last year, but we've seen him be elite before. And if a team wants a closer with a lot of upside, he's one of them. Robert Suarez is likely to opt out of his contract and be a free agent and sign with the team, and likely wants to be a closer, but who knows where he's going to get that opportunity. And even Raisel Iglesias is going to be a free agent. He's such a big second half guy. Who knows if he'll be able to survive another terrible first half.
Yeah. I think in that group, that the and I'll kind of include Fairbanks in there with like Iglesias and Suarez, just because Fairbanks, I mean, his option probably gets picked up, but there's still the trade possibility. Right. So not really sure what to expect there, but I do like, especially at this point, I like the Fairbanks, Suarez, Iglesias trio, and Hoffman as well. I think like Hoffman, that's a
steal. Yeah, Hoffman going that late was certainly a steal. He's got a lot of upside.
17th closer, reliever.
That's crazy.
So yeah, I love that. I love those guys. Yeah, Helsley, I think that's because Nate Schwartz took him, big Cardinals fan. So he's got the rose colored glasses. For Helsley, I think Helsley is a fun flyer inside the top 200 right now. Probably not. That's a guy who's probably 50-50 in what his role is going to be next year. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he'll get a chance to close if he wants it again, but that's another guy like the Dodgers just bring in for a year, because why not? We can pay him $20 million or $15 million a year. And, you know,
like, and then they use him like Kirby Yates.
Yeah, exactly. Just because the Dodgers can do that. But yeah, Finnegan is, because Finnegan was the only thing that interests me from Finnegan is his time in Detroit, where something changed, especially before he got hurt. He was like a whole different pitcher, and he was starting to show some of the, I mean, he's always had a pretty good fastball. It's just like, I feel like this is a thing with Nationals relievers, and it might even extend to starters, but I'm hopeful that the Nationals pitching staff in general gets a bump next year from having a new staff, a whole new organization. Cause like all these guys, they have like pretty good foundations, like a pretty good fastballs, but then it's like, they just underperform, and there's no swing and miss stuff from a lot of these guys, but like, you know, Ferrer, I feel like can take a step forward, hopefully. But yeah, Finnegan, I feel like for Finnegan, maybe his best bet is just to resign in Detroit and co-close with Vest again, which eats into both those guys' values. But without having any certainty with Finnegan, I feel like that is just way too high. Because yeah, there's a chance he's setting up games somewhere. I do think if he does get a closer role, depending on the situation, though, like I'm not out on Finnegan like I have been in the past. I think just because of what we saw in Detroit, like maybe another pitching savvy team can even, you know, do more with him, maybe even unlock something else. Because again, good fastball foundation. It's just, you know, the secondaries have always lagged behind, but we'll see. It's, for me, Finnegan's too early, and even, you know, Jansen's like another one where I probably wouldn't go this high.
Right, because he's also a free agent and he's in his 40s.
Yeah, but he's still like, he had a good second half.
The underlying metrics are still there too.
Yeah, still it's just fine. His cutter's
and
still,
it's almost like he's almost guaranteed to be a closer given same, his pursuit of saves.
Situation, yeah. And I think I put it, he's like 26 saves behind Lee, something like that. I don't know. Or no, he's 26 saves behind, like, from getting 500, which I think that might be the next. He'll pass Lee Smith next year, become third overall. But then, like, 500 would be a cool way, you know, to go out of 500 saves. Because, yeah, like we talked about in the past, I don't think that's ever the way closers are used. And I don't think 500 saves is on the table in the future. So, yeah, I'm sure Jansen will be fighting we're looking for a closer role somewhere. So I'm kind of comfortable with him. I guess that's a 19th overall reliever. That's not terrible. But yeah, maybe he's like, you know, I'll go win a World Series somewhere and just like get my three saves to pass Lee Smith and then, you know, not really worry about it. So we'll see. But I feel like, yeah, that whole tier is very, yeah, there's some highs and lows of that grouping there.
Right. Yeah. Like the Hoffman pick is so good. And I think Palencia is a solid choice right there too.
Yeah. Palencia. That's the other guy I didn't mention.
I
want to believe that he's going to close, and he should get a chance to close out games as long as they don't bring in someone.
It's also like clear he's not going to be as good as he was this past year.
That's who he did kind of fade down the stretch. And Andrew Kittredge was pretty good for them. I think he'll be back. Do they bring back Brad Keller too? I don't know. Could give him some competition. But I think at that range, Palencia, I think, given the upside, makes sense. I think that was Eno who took him too, which makes sense. Eno's been on Palencia from day one, so that's that checks out.
Yeah. All right, then we skip a round of relievers and we return to a couple relievers in the 17th round. And I think we can throw in the one from the 18th round, or we'll throw in both of the ones from the 18th round. We had Tanner Scott, then Will Vest, Jose Ferrer went after that. You took Jose Ferrer. I took Will Vest. I felt I wanted Tanner Scott there. I didn't get him. Will Vest felt like a good consolation prize, especially like, I don't know, if Finnegan went first, like I'd rather have Vest over Finnegan. It feels like he's already got a pretty good shot at closing and he was good last year. He's been very solid for the Tigers. He's not somebody that excites me, but it's like, if I need saves, if I need somebody that's going to get 20 saves and be solid, like I feel like you can count on that from Vest. Pretty good. Tanner Scott going that late, I think that's a pretty big steal. I like Tanner Scott.
I was going to take him. He was taking the pick before me by Kyle. Yeah. I know Kyle,
but then you got Jose Ferrer and that's pretty good. I there is like a part of me that feels like I don't think the Nationals are going to bring in somebody else. They could, they've done that with Kyle Finnegan the past couple of years. But also like there's a lot of upside in that bullpen and it sort of feels like it's possible Ferrer doesn't open the season as the closer just because he's a lefty, but I do love his stuff. I think he underperformed last year a lot. He's one of the best ground ball pitchers in baseball. I think there's more upside with his strikeout stuff. And as you mentioned, we're going to see a whole new pitching or a whole new coaching staff in the nation's capital. So maybe Ferrer does attain that next level that you can see with his stuff. So that's a very fun upside pick at that point in the draft.
Yeah, that's, you know, I don't see them like the guy, the closer. I mean, maybe they take a shot on like the free agent closers. I'm trying to think like a 1 year deal with like a veteran guy maybe, but I don't see them. I don't know. I feel like Ferrer was solid enough. He had a really good second half and was fine in the closer role. I'd like to see him develop in that role because Clayton Beater's the one guy, but his walk rate has always been bad. It's, you know, I'm not holding my breath that walk rate gets better from Beater. If it does, if he can get a walk rate under 10%, then he's definitely got closer upside and could make a run there. But I think Ferrer, it's like, you know, just not a big strikeout guy, but throws really hard, gets, you know, weak contact, gets ground balls. I think he's a good guy to match with like a Mason Miller too, where you're getting strikeouts from Miller. And Ferrer's not getting you strikeouts, but I'm hoping he gets saves and solid ratios.
There's safety there and upside with the potential that Ferrer shows.
I was gonna take Scott and then Kyle.
Great pick at that point in the draft because the only questions we have about him, I don't think the injury's gonna plague him. And we talked earlier, We talked earlier though about how like I don't look at his performance last year as something that's indicative of what he's gonna do next year. And with some of the competition leaving that bullpen even too, it feels like next year he could just completely go off. It's really just about how the Dodgers use him. And like you said, they're paying him to be the closer. I think Tanner Scott's going to be solid once again next year and do what we expected him to do this year.
Yeah. And I liked your Vest pick too at this point too, after, you know, the 20th reliever. Even if Finnegan does return, I still think Vest is 1A. I think he's, you know, we saw in the postseason, he was still the guy. Vest did scare me in September. But in October, once they made the postseason, those games started happening, he was the guy AJ Hinch relied on to end games and in the biggest spots. So I think he's the, if anyone, even if they, I don't think, again, I feel like AJ Hinch wants to go with some sort of committee just so he has options. So I don't think they add a big name reliever or a big name closer. Vest, I feel like, is a solid get there. Did we talk about Pagan? Did we get there yet?
No. Okay. Pagan and Dennis Santana were the next two picks. Pagan in the middle of the 18th round and Dennis Santana at the beginning of the 19th round. And I mean, Pagan is surprisingly somebody that you like. I don't know if surprising is the right word. I think it's he was really good last year. There's just something about the Pagan name brand that I'm not like totally convinced by because of what he's done in his past, him being an upcoming free agent. Like, is somebody going to sign him to be a closer? And Dennis Santana sort of in the opposite boat where it's like, all right, we know he's not going to be as good as last year, but there's nobody else in that Pirates bullpen. I mean, I like some of the guys. I like Justin Lawrence. I think Isaac Mattson's interesting too, but Dennis Santana's going to get a chance to close. The Pirates are super cheap. They're not going to sign anybody else, but I don't think Santana's got the upside that we saw this past year, where Pagan's upside seems legit, actually, especially because he did that in like the one park where I was like,
I know,
don't put Pagan there. And then he like had the best season of his career. So it really depends on where he goes. And Santana's just one of those safe guys where it's like, he's going to be traded at the deadline at some point. So you're banking like 10 saves, right, I guess, in the first half, but who knows how good he's going to be and if he can even hold that role.
Yeah. I liked overall. I like both these picks at this point. But yeah, Pagan's going to be a tough one because there's more so than the other guys who are closers this year. He's definitely not as guaranteed to get a closer role somewhere, but it feels like there's enough openings where he could find a role, a closer role somewhere. It's not like he just has this past year as a track record too as a closer. He had a really good year in Tampa Bay, 2018-19, whenever that was. He's done it before. And I do think, what he showed this year, especially pitching in that ballpark, which there are some home run issues for him. There's going to be home run issues for him. But he's a guy who, if he goes to like Detroit, like that's kind of a very interesting landing spot. Between him and Vest could be a fun duo. Or just, somewhere where it's going to be a little bit pitcher friendly for him. I don't know who. I mean, the Angels probably need a closer. That's not a terrible landing spot. There's options for him. Even if he goes back to Cincinnati, I feel like this is a steal where he's going.
Mm-hmm.
Santana, I just want to see. It's fine. I think it's late for him, especially because he is probably going to be closing. I can't imagine Pittsburgh spending money on a closer, even though there's a ton out there. He's fine. Not a big strikeout upside guy, but he should be fine for the first half, like you said, and then we'll see. But at this point, it's a solid pick after 200.
Yep. Then we have a big jump to sort of the last grouping of relievers. Everybody basically after pick 250 is, I don't know, I don't want to say like they're all shots in the dark, but there's concerns about all of them, and not all of them are concerns about how good the players are. I think a lot of the times it's like, are they even going to be a reliever next year? There were so many guys drafted where it's like, okay, I think with this pitcherless group that we're usually like that we're looking at some fun starters. So I think like Reed Detmers there was the next one taken at 249. Questions about whether or not he's going to be a starter or if he's going to be the closer for the Angels. There's so many good relievers in that, or exciting, I don't want to say good, exciting relievers in that Angels bullpen that I think they could put Detmers back in the rotation, but he's never had success there. Yeah.
One more chance.
I took Abner Uribe next, and you took Ronnie Henriquez. And I think, not to toot my own horn, but definitely to toot your own horn, those are some of the better picks this late in the draft. I think Abner Uribe's got a legitimate chance. I've already sort of talked at length about that. But Ronnie Henriquez, like I pulled up his pitcher list page today while I was researching relievers, and holy moly, what a call by me in the preseason last year. I was like, I like this guy and MLB The Show. And then he just went crazy. He is so good. And really the only question there is if the Marlins let him close. And if they do, he's going to shoot up the ranks. And even if that, I think it won't be enough. If he's the full on closer, he's going to be super reliable next year. He has such high upside.
I don't think that they're going to, the way that the Marlins are doing everything, and it looks like it's pretty much the same staff coming back. I don't think they're going to change their approach with their bullpen, which is unfortunate. My best case scenario hope is that he kind of becomes like Will Vest, at least, where he's 1A.
Mm-hmm.
That that might take something from Fauché, or I mean, there's just so many other guys that.
But he's also got like way more upside than a guy like Vest. Like I would much rather have Henriquez than Vest if I knew that's what his role was going to be.
And I'll even, I mean, this is because you know, I took him as the 27th reliever off the board. He finished the year as the 19th best reliever. He finished as the 97th overall player in that same format of league and Yahoo. So even as not the like just kind of getting saves here and there, but he adds wins because they'll bring him in the fifth, sixth inning. Mm-hmm. I think there's still even value. Just his usage overall is valuable to leagues, and I don't see any reason why the numbers, the strikeout stuff doesn't return. I mean, it's everything seems pretty legit here.
Yeah, and they're gonna have a new manager, right?
No, the Marlins don't have a new manager, right?
Did they replace Schumacher during the year?
No, that was last year. They have I can't think of his name, the guy from the Dodgers, but they're doing everything very like they're calling pitches from the dugout.
Clayton McCullough.
McCullough. Like they're trying to be very unconventional.
Right. Yeah.
So we might not see a closer there. I think the other, even between Uribe and Henriquez here, I think Jordan Leisure going three more picks later is a pretty fun one too. And
a lot of upside there.
Yeah.
And not a lot of competition.
The way he finished the year. Similar boat to the kind of these two guys, where there's upside, but also there's a legitimate path to being a closer there. So, I like the Leisure pick as well. I was probably going to throw a dart on him at the end of the draft too, if he didn't get drafted.
Mm-hmm. And the next three quote unquote relievers that were drafted were Grant Taylor, Lucas Ursegg, and Griffin Jacks, all of whom could end up in the rotation. I hadn't heard that about Ursegg, but that makes sense. I think we had actually mentioned that a couple weeks ago or even 4 weeks ago that Ursegg has such a deep arsenal. Why not try him out in the rotation?
Yeah, I'm guessing that's why Eno took him. I don't know. Yeah.
Right. Because I was like, he's not somebody you draft as a reliever.
Yeah. Especially he wasn't great last year.
He's got that. He's got that insider knowledge. Grant Taylor, though, he's fun as a starter too. And you took Griffin Jacks too. I think both of those guys are fun as starters. And
that's what, even
I mean, Jacks, if he's like whatever role he's in, like he's going to be valuable in fantasy, especially in this kind of league.
I think that's kind of like that's a guy. I think like the last pick of every draft I'm in, if he's available, like I'm probably like Griffin Jacks. Just especially early in drafts, it's like. Don't know what the role is going to be, but there's a lot of fun upside here. So let's like take a shot and then see what happens with his role. Mm-hmm. But I feel like all of those guys make sense. Taylor, Ursegg, Jacks as starters. Ursegg and Jacks are guys we talked about last year at first pitch. Cause Ursegg has a 4-pitch arsenal. Jacks does too.
Mm-hmm.
Both kind of had underwhelming years this year in a relief role. Maybe it's time to make that switch finally. And both teams, you know, we saw Kansas City do it with Bubic last year. We've seen Tampa Bay do it with a bunch of guys. So both teams who have got experience, you know, moving bullpen guys into the rotation.
Right.
That's some fun upside there.
And it makes sense that the Rays would go out and trade somebody like Taj Bradley for Jacks if they had the plan of, in the offseason, we're going to transition him to the rotation.
Yeah, and their bullpen starters, there's so many guys there.
Right, they don't really need him that much.
If they trade Fairbanks or Clevinger, even maybe still. They still need him. I know, right?
They got guys like, Baker, Montgomery, Usetta.
Yeah,
they're solid. And then I closed out the draft final pick with Tony Santion. I like literally was like, oh, well, we have to talk about this on the podcast. I should probably make my last pick a reliever.
I was hoping
it makes sense. Yeah. And I was debating some guys, some that were likely less fun. I almost went with Brad Keller, but the fact that he's not on a team has me a little. So I was like, okay, Tony Santion's probably the closer in Cincinnati, and he's got as much upside as anybody else that's left on the board. So I went with Santion. We saw last year, first half, maybe he didn't have the upside that he displayed in his first taste of the bullpen in 2024, but the second half said otherwise. And with Pagan out of the way, feels like Santion could really take off here as the Reds closer. So I'm sort of excited about that pick and being able to get him late in drafts. I think as we get closer to draft season, Santeon's a guy that's going to shoot up draft boards as the, if the Reds don't,
they don't add anybody up.
Yeah. Right, he's going to climb pretty fast. So felt sort of good about the upside in that one. Excites me more than the guys available. But on that note, among the guys who were not drafted, who surprised you the most? Who's like, if you had one more pick and you had to pick one of the relievers that weren't drafted, who would you take?
Yeah, I think Ryan Walker is a weird one. I don't know. I get it. Like,
I considered him, but it was boring.
Yeah, it is boring. And like, I just, the way Buster Posey's operating, I just feel like they're going to want to be better than having Ryan Walker as their closer.
Right. And even if he does hold that role, it's like, if you're taking the argument of stuff always wins out, like Joel Piguero is going to be the closer by May because he's got like top five stuff plus in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And like, yeah, Walker had like a sub 20% strikeout rate last year. Like, I'm not super confident in him getting all the way back. And he clearly is not somebody that's had a lot of success in the closer role anyway.
Yeah. And like, he got back into the role to end the year, but it didn't go so well. So no. Yeah, I might've been a little high on him with my rankings. I have him 23, probably need to move him down a little bit because there is more uncertainty there, I think, than, you know, we might be realizing. Like you said, Brad Keller is another one. Brad Keller and Phil Maton, I think, or Phil Maton, are two guys that both free agents, both coming off like career years, probably could sneak a closer role somewhere. But most likely they probably don't. But I feel like just their upside alone has me, you know, kind of like, especially this early, it's like their upside makes me think that they're top 30 options for now. Because like outside of that, then you get into like, okay, well, Kevin Ginkle's available. He's probably going to be the closer for Arizona unless they do something else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jojo Romero splitting the role in St. Louis, whatever's going on in LA between Ben Joyce and Robert Stevenson, and who else, who knows? Yeah. Like AJ Minter's technically the best reliever right now in the Mets bullpen, but he's not going to close out games, right? Like, that would be crazy.
Yeah. They're signing somebody.
Yeah. So there's, you know, of all the other guys that didn't go. Yeah. I mean, Robert Garcia in Texas too. Like, I feel like they're going to add more people. And again, their bullpen, they had all guys on 1 year deals last year. So they're going to have to either do that again or actually, you know, sign a closer finally. But I mean, it kind of worked out with them. With Sean Armstrong last year, it was pretty good. Chris Martin was solid again as well. But yeah, those, I think Walker's the only one that I was like really surprised didn't go in the top 276 picks. He didn't go. I feel like that's an interesting one. But yeah, last year was rough. I'm sure a lot of people got burned by him. And then yeah, I just, San Francisco's got to make, especially now, making that big splash in manager of Vitalo. Yeah, I just feel like they're gonna be aggressive this offseason, and the bullpen's definitely a big spot for them, big need for them.
All right, well, let's touch quickly on the rest of our drafts. I know we're pretty deep into the podcast, so we won't spend too much time on this. Were you Acuna, Kurtz, Alvarez, Neto? Was your goal to go hitters early? I mean, I think that's a good goal in this type of league and in this type of draft.
Usually how like how I attack these kind of leagues and drafts. Outside of like, you know, once like Skubal, Skeens, and Crochet go, it's like, okay, now there's like a gap of starters that I'm like, I'll take Hunter Green in the fifth and like feel like that's just as good as one of those anyone outside of that top three, kind of, in my opinion. Kurtz was like a fun, I know everyone was like itching to get Nick Kurtz, so I was like, I'm gonna just take a leap here. But I think Jordan in the third, I don't know, that could be
boom or bust, but I mean the upside's crazy,
right? That's like, if he's just can stay healthy, I know it's kind of a big if, but between him and Ronalds, I think, yeah, I like kind of what happened there. Neto, I don't know,
I love the Neto pick. I mean, he's so underrated, especially
25 guy.
I mean, he's been so good the last 2 years.
Yeah, and I've seen him. Yeah, he's kind of varying opinions on him. It seems like for where he goes next year.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and then it's like fill in with veterans. Like Jose Altuve, I don't feel great about it. Second base is just a kind of a dumpster fire.
Yeah,
and I realized that. I missed out on someone early-ish. I'm trying to find it on the board. But, like, yeah, then you kind of, like, even, like, Jack. Marte went in the third, and I was hoping maybe he would sneak back to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, no, all right, now second base is just, just going to have to wait. So, you know, I don't know. My pitching staff was kind of based on, like, things Nick said. I know I feel good about Bryce Miller that late. He's having he had a good postseason. I think I'm hoping that translates. Round. Yeah.
And you went with Schlittler in the 10th. That was,
I have to go with my fellow Wapolian.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Cause his mom's the whole Red Sox Yankees thing, the whole family's Red Sox fans. And now the Yankees fans.
Yeah. But yeah, that's boom or bust right there. But I think him and Chase Burns back to back are kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Seeing you don't know what to get from them. But yeah, how did you pick from the 12 spot, which is
I did that because we were doing a slow draft and I knew it nice would be way easier to just be like, oh, it's my turn. I get two picks out of the way and now I can wait forever again. So that was really the strategy there. I also felt like the second like that turn right there, there's such strong stuff. Mm-hmm. And I did want to go with a starter early because I know how these drafts go. I know that people will wait on starters. And if like I can start with Skubal and then, you know, fill in from there, I'm going to feel really good about my starters. So I went Skubal at 12 and then Lindor at 13. I felt good about that. Lindor's like perennial 30-30 candidate. From there though, this is the point in the offseason where I haven't really figured out who my guys are. And the third and fourth round are usually where I get my guys, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the point that I was at, I think all the guys that I was interested in were gone and I thought I could wait at other positions. So I went double outfield. I went PCA and Byron Buxton, neither of whom I'm super confident in, but the upside is off the charts. And that's right. What I was going for here, especially in a league with only three outfielders and a league where it's 12 teams, it's small roster. So the replacement level is super high. If PCA isn't as good or Buxton gets injured, there's plenty of opportunity to replace them. And there's going to be tons of outfielders available because it's just a three outfielder league. So I didn't feel too great about those guys, but the upside was off the charts. And
just looking at the board. Like I love the Michael Bush pick too.
I felt good about him too, because like his underlying metrics are really good.
And Naylor. Yeah. Like,
yeah. And that really was sort of like the last good first baseman, but yeah, Michael Bush in the seventh, I felt good about. I got George Kirby and Freddie Peralta before that as well. And then followed up Bush with Tyler Glasnow. So then my rotation is like Skubal, Kirby, Peralta, Glasnow. Like that feels killer, especially like, you know, there's some injury stuff with Glasnow, but like I said, replacement level is crazy. The upside in that is off the charts, and like having Skubal to anchor the rotation, I'm like, I can take a chance on Glasnow.
Glasnow, yeah.
Randy Arozarena I took in the 10th. That's sort of in the same boat as PCA and Buxton, where it's like, you know, power speed. I don't know if you necessarily need that in this kind of league. Like it's better suited for a roto league, but
I feel like it helps in this though. You win week to week. You could maybe 1 week you're winning with your like with stolen bases, next week you're winning with like power. Yeah, so it can change. I feel like those dual threat guys are always you know a good boost. Jackson Holliday, you sniped me on that.
I feel like 12th round and on, I locked in from like 12 through 19, like through the end of the draft. I felt like I finally locked in. I figured out like, you know, who I wanted to target. So I got Jackson Holliday there at 12 as my like first second baseman. He's so I felt good about that one.
Right.
He's got to. The underlying metrics suggest otherwise, but I feel like he's still like 21. So there's certainly a chance there. And I really
just
do like
throw away this Orioles season and just start over with those.
Start
guys
over. Yeah. I'll take that. And then I took Barger after that, and I feel good about that one. I mean, I waited really long on third base. That was a strategy to just wait on infield because I know how shallow the offense is in these leagues with no middle infield or corner infield, that there's going to be like enough infielders left over late in the drafts that I could get guys like Jackson Holliday and Barger and even, you know, like Michael Bush a few rounds before and still feel good about my infield. And, you know, Barger broke out this year and everything there supports that. So I felt good about that one.
The second half. Yeah.
Yeah. I took Treya Savage after that. And he's like, he seems dope. There's a bit of uncertainty there, but like, man, what a rise for him. And to pair that with the rest of my starters, I felt good about that. And then Sedan sort of is in the same boat as the other outfielders I took, like, you know, could go either way with them. But I like Yandy Diaz in the 16th round. I felt like that was a steal. I didn't see anybody talking about that one, but it was like he's batted over 300 like every year for the past 4 years and now is hitting 20 plus home runs like it's nothing. And he bats like lead off for the Rays and he's just incredible. And like nobody talks about him because he doesn't steal, I guess. I don't know. Getting it that late, I felt like that was incredible.
Yeah, I think it's like you said, with first base, you took Bush and then there was only like two first basemen to go in between that and Yandy Diaz for like 8 rounds.
Yeah, it was three. Ben Rice, Spencer Torkelson, and Manzardo.
Yeah, but I mean, and Rice, he's taken. Nick took Rice probably to be a catcher, right? So
that makes sense.
So yeah, then, it's just Torkelson and Manzardo in between that gap between Diaz and Bush is that's a really good duo. And even with like Rafael's got, he should have second base eligibility. So you have, you have options between Holliday and Rafael at second. Barger and I think Barger going, you know, Matt Shaw, Westberg went, let's see, like 4 rounds earlier than that. I feel like that's pretty fair. I think what Barger's doing in the postseason's somewhat real, at least. Like there's some
I mean, he was good during the regular season too. I'll take the 20 homers and batting in that lineup. I liked your Semien pick at 21. I mean, I like wanted to take him earlier. I almost took him where I took Holliday. So like getting him that late, he's got to bounce back a little bit.
I know he's old, but like,
he was never somebody that relied on like hitting the ball super hard or whatever. It's just about if he can stay healthy and pull the ball in the air.
Right. Yeah. I think that's an interesting, if that's like a round, if that's a place where I can get him, then that's. Cause like last year, I mean, I got burned by him last year in some leagues, but like I'm not worried about getting hurt again, especially that price point. I feel like I took Alec Bohm, but I feel like if I had been a little bit more savvy, I would have gone with Murakami.
Yeah, who went right after him.
I'm like, you know, I never, in these early drafts, I don't know how to read the international free agents, but that was a fun one that I kind of was kicking myself over.
Yeah, and I sort of wrapped up with a couple fun ones. I mean, the rotation, I did Zach Gallen and Joey Cantillo. I was surprised Gallen went that late, but I guess the upside isn't as obvious as it was before. And Cantillo, I don't know. I could go either way with him. But Dylan Cruz and Jordan Lawler were my last hitters, and I think Cruz is somebody who could finally break out next year. Just was unhealthy all of last year. Lawler as well, pretty post-hype. He's finally going to get an opportunity to play third base. Yeah, he should get the opportunity to play third base. I'm not fully convinced there, but I think I was like debating him or Trent Grisham. And I was like, you know, Jordan Lawler is more fun. If I have to talk about this on a podcast or write about it a little, I think I'd rather talk about Lawler than be like, well, Trent Grisham was good last year and maybe he'll be good again next year.
Did Trent Grisham not get drafted?
No, somebody drafted
him. Oh, yeah, he'd be later in the second. Okay.
Yeah,
so that's crazy. I mean, I know like there's no chance he repeats, but that
well, he's going to be a free agent too. So yeah, like, who knows where he plays?
But Stadium, I know.
I had him in our home league, and I like love Trent Grisham now, because of that. But yeah, Jordan Lawler felt like more fun. There's so much upside there too if everything works out. He's just been always good in the minor leagues. He just hasn't really had the opportunity in the big leagues. But any other of your picks you want to talk about?
Not really. I mean, I feel like, you know, catcher is always like an interesting one. I don't know.
And I like Kirk. I'm messed with Kirk. I mean, more so in points leagues, but he's dope. And they want to play him every day because he's so good defensively.
I know. He's like their little catalyst too. I was going to take Drake Baldwin though. I got sniped there. And then it was I had Baldwin and Kirk left and it was like, you know what? But that's just, and pretty much in any league, I just, unless it's a two catcher league, I'm just gonna wait till I get like
that
10th or 11th catcher.
I think I probably made a mistake taking Augustin Ramirez in the 11th round, but I did feel like I didn't know who I was gonna take there. And Ramirez looks like he could be like a top three hitting catcher.
He's just
not good defensively.
I know. I did not realize how bad he was defensively. I just pulled up his Savant page.
It's like I think his WAR was like terrible. His F WAR was 0.0. He had 0.0 F WAR and somehow a 91 WRC plus, but that's because he doesn't walk either. But he had a sub 20% strikeout rate. He batted just .231. It was a .253 BABIP though. But 21 homers and 16 steals from a 23-year-old catcher.
A 2020 catcher. I don't care what anything else is. If you're getting
right.
If you can possibly get 20 home runs and 20 stolen bases from a catcher, then
And StatCast said he underperformed everything too, with like a 270 XBA, 466 X slug. Like, this is a guy that I think is going to be really good next year. It's just about how much the Marlins want to play him. And we saw he like DH'd most of the season. He was DH in 63 games and a catcher in 73.
They're going to move him to first base.
Yeah. Either first or he's DH in like either way. Like, he's got catcher eligibility and 2020 upside. Like, that's going to be hard to find from any other catcher, to be honest. Right. Like, I don't know where else you're getting that sort of upside. I don't think there's any other catcher that's doing
this. Just catch like, 20 games a year, every year. And then, we'll be happy.
All right. Well, that was the way too early mock draft we did with the other Pitcher List podcasts. Make sure to go listen to the rest of the Pitcher List podcast network to hear the other guys break down their teams and hopefully say a couple positive things about ours. We should have an article coming out on pitcherlist.com later in the winter, also discussing the same sort of stuff, but it was really nice to sort of get an idea of how people are drafting relievers at this point in the season. There will be a lot of change there, but does give me a little bit of certainty in my head about, what people are thinking right now, and that, we're sort of on the right track of how we're thinking about these relievers at this point in the season. But that'll do it for this episode of the In the Pen podcast. Rick, why don't you go ahead and plug your social media and let everybody know what you're working on?
You can find me on socials at I am Rick Graham. Closer list is out, so eventually I'll get some sort of save plus holds list out. For now, just kind of gearing up for First Pitch Arizona in 2 weeks. So putting together.
Yeah, we'll be live in our next podcast.
Yeah, looking forward to that. It's sold out. Crazy. I would tell people to sign up to go, but it's sold out first time ever. So, should be a lot of fun.
It will be dope. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler. You can follow the pod at In the Pen Pod. You can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com. I will be working on all kinds of stuff for Pitcher List this offseason and working over at Baseball HQ as well. But you can find, like I said, all my work on my personal website. But that'll do it for this episode 140 of the In the Pen podcast. We'll talk to you all live from First Pitch Arizona in a couple of weeks.